Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, out of the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is June 22nd, 2024, or it is the 16th day of the 4th month, 2028. We will start our second service on the Sabbath day with a song, and then we'll go into the subject of the house of the David as the angel of the Yeshua. This is on Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 9, Yadaviki Hala. Text of address is October the 5th, 1946, Mount Carmel Chapel. We shall turn unto Zechariah, the 12th chapter. The text of our subject is found in the 8th verse. But in order to find the time and the people under which the verse directly speaks, we must begin our study with the first verse of the chapter, Zechariah 12:1. Okay, Zechariah 12:1, for the burden of the word of the Yahshua for Israel. Saith Yahshua, which stretches forth the heavens and layeth the foundation of the earth. Let's to go back and do that. It's talking about Yahweh, Yahweh the Father, for the burden of the word of the Yahweh for the Israel, saith the Yahweh the Father, which stretches forth the heavens and layeth the foundation of the earth, and formeth the spirit of man within him. So Yahshua, Yahweh is the one that formeth the spirit of man within him. There are two points in the verse that we must seriously consider. Number one, that the burden is the Yahweh, is the Father. And number two, that this burden is for Israel, house of Israel, not for the world. Zechariah 12:2. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of the trembling unto all of the people round about, when they shall be in the siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Judah is a tribe of Judah that David is a member of. Was a member of, and antipical David is a member of it today. And Jerusalem is where the ministers and the priests and all the officials that runs the sanctuary, this is where they live. They live in the city of Jerusalem. The laity lives out in the hills of Judea, the little town. They don't live in Jerusalem. From this verse we learn that the Gentile nations are to make a siege not only against Jerusalem, but against Judah also, yes, against the entire kingdom, church, or people. And at that time, at the time of the ones of the siege, Jerusalem is to be made a cup of trembling. And I guarantee you that's going on right now in the world. All nations right now are concerned with having a part in that Zechariah 14 war that's ongoing right now in Israel. A cup of trembling unto all people, that is, all the people shall fear Jerusalem and tremble before her. Zechariah 12:3. And in that day when I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people, all that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. Do all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. This siege will not be made only by the nations adjacent to Jerusalem, but by all the people of the earth. A thing that is made possible only by the communication lines in our day. Thus will your wisdom be a burdensome stone unto all the people round about, and an endeavor to combat their fear. They burden themselves by the besieging of the city. For this evil work it shall be cut in pieces. Zechariah 12:4. In that day, saith the Yahweh, I will smite every horse with astonishment, and his rider with the madness, and I will open mine eyes upon the house of the Judah, that's the kingdom of David, and will smite every horse, that's every minister of the people, with the blindness. Though the Yahweh shall smite with the madness, with the astonishment, and with the blindness, those who besiege the city, yet he shall open his eyes upon the house of the Judah, that's the everlasting kingdom of David, and typical David, Zechariah 12:5, and the governors of the Judah, that's the ministers of the kingdom of David, this is that everlasting kingdom that's pointed out in the prophecy of Daniel 2:44-45, it's an everlasting kingdom of heaven that is set up in these last days, shall say in their heart, for the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be my strength, and the Yahshua, the son of the host, their king. After the sinners are taken out from her midst, the judgment work for the living, then will the governors of the Judah realize that their strength depends upon the saintly inhabitants of the Jerusalem and upon the Yahshua, their king, or their savior. Then it is that they will indeed be strong. Okay, it says, let us see what the next verse says about this. Zechariah 12:6. And that day will I make the governors of Judah like an hearth afar among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheep, and they shall devour all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left. And Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, even in Jerusalem. It matters not what we think. Yahweh is to have a strong, faithful people, the very kind here described. And Jerusalem is to be inhabited by the holy people, not a sinner among them. Since the antitypical prophet Elijah, who appears just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, just before the judgment day for the living, finds the church overrun by the devil as badly as was found the Seventh-day Adventist church, the spiritual Israel of today, overrun by the devil as badly as was the Jewish church in the Yahshua's day. Well, we're in the Yahshua's day again today. And as the saints, the first fruits, are to be rescued one by one, he first sends fishers to fish them out, and afterwards hunters to hunt them out. Jeremiah 16:16. And I know, because we had the hunters come to our house out in the country on the farm back in 1948. We had one of these hunters sent out from the big city of Odessa, and he came out and he spent 6 months on our farm helping us farm and teaching us the shepherd rod message. Thus he gathers them one by one, Isaiah 27:12-13. And so it is today. They are fished by this free literature and are now hunted by the men right to their houses, be they in the city, the vintage, or countryside. Zechariah 12:7, For the Yahweh also shall save the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against the Judah. He shall save the tents, that's the humble dwellings, rather than the houses or palaces of the Judah first. That is, the Yahweh is to save first the common people, the laity, so that the ministry may not exalt themselves above the laity, that all may learn to give glory unto Yahweh, not unto any man. Since nothing such as these verses of the Scripture predict has ever taken place in Jerusalem or in any other part of the world, obviously these predictions are yet to meet their fulfillment. And now we are to find out if they are to be fulfilled in our time or later on. Since the work we are now doing is not sponsored by any man, and since Yahweh has led us all the way as definitely as he led the Exodus movement, making our way inch by inch as providence directs, and also since we are as the only people who have the message of the reestablishment of the house of the David. And you can read Amos chapter 9 for that. And of restoring all things, Mark 9:12. And are therefore named Davidians. There is no escaping the conclusion that the time for the fulfillment of these prophecies is very close at the hand, even at the door, for the reason for which the announcement of these events is now being trumpeted throughout the Advent world. Plainly then, whatever the Yahweh has to say in this chapter is for our learning and for our own special and present needs. It is a communication especially addressed unto us and unsealed at this particular time so that we may know what the Yahweh would have us do and how to do it, so that quickly all things be restored. We are now to read the text of our study. Zechariah 12:8. In that day shall the Yeshua, this is the Son now, defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is people among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yeshua before them. Besides giving us the assurance that the Yeshua shall defend his people, inspiration likens them unto David and unto the Father Yahweh. Even the feeble one shall be as a David, and the house of David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before them. What a great and wonderful statement. What a privilege to be likened unto Yahweh himself. In order for one to know what it means to be as a David, one must know what kind of a person ancient David was. To begin with, he was a first-rate shepherd. He risked his own life for the sheep. You remember that in order to save the land, he courageously went after the lion and the bear and killed them with his bare hand, and to save his nation's independence and Yahweh's great honor, on another occasion, he again risked his life by the bravery facing the giant Goliath because of the David's faithfulness. Yahweh delivered him from the beast and from the giant and made him king over his people. For the faithfulness of a person and the little things indicates his faithfulness and the greater things also. Faithfulness always brings promotion. So in order to be as a David, one must be as faithful, as dependable, and as zealous for Yahweh's kingdom as was a David of old. Now that we might know what it means to be as a Yahweh, we must study what Yahweh is like. At the outset, he did not only create and abundantly fill the earth with every good thing for his creature, but he also planted a garden, a home for the man. Thus he made a model home for all human beings who were to live thereafter. He taught Adam how to keep the home and how to dress the garden. He taught him to speak and to discern the nature between one beast and another, to name them accordingly, for the Yahweh endowed man with the knowledge and life in order for the making him happy and useful in the making the world what it ought to be. Even after the holy pair fell and the sin, Yahweh was still interested in them as he was before. So much so, in fact, that he immediately began to teach them how to redeem themselves and to return unto their eternal home. From that day unto this, he thus continued to teach the human family. To do this saving work, Yahweh sent down the Spirit of the Truth. He sent prophets and angels, also his only Son, all teachers of the redemption through the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 19 and 20, of the New and Living Way. He himself descended Mount Sinai in southern Arabia. That's where it's at today. And even though they slew nearly all of his servants, including his son, yet his unfailing interest in the human race has continued on until this very day. Notwithstanding our faults, his promise to take us back into the Eden there to live with him, if we repent, still stand as sure as does the sun. Now you see what Yahweh is like, and if we are to be as Yahweh, then that is what we too must be like. That means that we must be as interested in the one another and in the upbuilding of his kingdom as he is interested. We are to be as unselfish as he is. We must gladly teach others all that he has taught us. We are to do all we can to improve the living conditions of others. We are to make the world better than it should be if we were not in it. In the creation week, Yahweh did his part. Now we are to do our part of the creation if we are to be as Yahweh. Whatever good thing we may have, be it a trade or some other gift that is worth having, we ought to be as faithful in it and as anxious to teach it unto others as he is faithful and anxious to teach us. If we neglect this duty, we shall not only fail to be as Yahweh, but shall even be required to give account of our neglect. All through my life, I have found people very selfish and fearful that someone would get ahead of them in one way or another. When I was learning my trade, I often found it necessary to ask questions. But some with whom I was working evaded my question. Their selfishness, nevertheless, did not stop me from learning what I wanted to know. I learned it in some other way. Those men, however, did not profess to be so far advanced in the Christian living as we profess to be. And for this reason, their jealousy and selfishness can be charged only to their ignorance. But we who now know better should try to pass on our knowledge unto as many as possible, expecting nothing in return but their success in life. For Yahweh himself will reward us. But if we try to keep our knowledge to ourselves, we most assuredly shall be the losers. Remember, too, that whatever good we may possess is a gift from the Yahweh. Right here, the age-old saying, fits nicely. There is no limit to the good one can do if he does not care who gets the credit. For Yahshua taught the birds how to live and how to build nests and how to raise their young. Then should we not help others to build and to better their homes and living? For you recall Yahshua saying, whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of the cold water only in the name of a disciple, really I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Matthew 10:42. Were Yahweh not what he is, he would not be Yahweh. And if we continue as we ever were, we shall never be as the Yahweh. For the house of the David, moreover, is to be as the angel of the Yahweh before them. What does this statement mean? It means that if we are to be members of the house of the David, we must be as the David, as the Yahweh, and as the angels too. For the angels excel in the strength. They obey Yahweh's commandments. They hearken unto the voice of his word, Psalms 103:20. They are always at hand to minister unto the saints, and they have led them safely over every conflict throughout the ages. For the Yahweh expects his church and people to be just that, as the angel of the Yahweh, regardless of what we as individuals choose to be. Yahweh nevertheless will have a church that will be all of these. Now, what is the overall purpose of the house of the David? For the house of the David, as the scriptures reveal, is being built up for a threefold purpose. Number one, during the ingathering of the people, it is to build the old waste, to raise up the former desolation, and to repair the waste city, the desolations of the many generations, Isaiah 61:4. For this work of the rebuilding and restoring has as its type the rebuilding of the ancient Jerusalem by the ancient Jews returning from their Babylonian captivity into the land of their fathers, just as they were to build the waste, the former desolations, the temple of the Yahweh, the city and the walls, and to restore the true worship of the Yahweh according unto the Yahweh's own divine will. So we too, now in the antitypical ingathering, are called to do a similar work, only much greater both in the scope and in the proportion. We must therefore labor even more incessantly than they labored, and be happy and thankful for their having been privileged to have a part in such a great and glorious work. Number two, in addition, under this great and grand work, while in the Yahweh's hand as a battle, Acts, Jeremiah 51:20, He is with it to break the Gentiles' yoke, which now rests upon the shoulders of Yahweh's people. With it he is to emancipate his people from the Gentile rule, from Assyria. So Assyria is Gentile rule. And from Egypt, and from Patros, and from Cush, and from Elam, and from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea, Isaiah 11:11. With it he is to set up an ensign for the nations and for the assembling of the outcast of the Israel and for the gathering together of the dispersed of the Judah from the four corners of the earth, Isaiah 11:12. To get this work done, we are to be at first the many fishes, then the many hunters, Jeremiah 16:16. Thus it is that the first fruits are to be gathered, the 144,000. No, one by one, Isaiah 27:12. Let's do it again. Thus it is that the first fruits are to be gathered, one by one, Isaiah 27:12. We are now in the hunting days, going from city to city, from village to village, and from door to door, a thing which has never before been done. Besides fishing and hunting, we also are to make a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left after the first fruits are gathered from the Assyria, like as it was unto Israel and the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt, Isaiah 11:16. After this hunting is over and the highway built up, then it is that the sacred fruit will flow upon the mountain of the Yahshua's house. For one a nation, as it were, will say unto another nation, come, and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yahshua, and unto the house of the Yahweh of the Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we shall walk in his path. For the Lord shall go forth from the Mount Zion at the 12th hour, in Jerusalem, the house of David, the king of the tallest ground, and the word of the Yahweh from Jerusalem. Micah 4:2. Thus our work has also as its type the Exodus movement, going out of Egypt, for the establishing of itself in the promised land, and they were freed from their Egyptian bondage, so we shall be freed from the world's yoke, and just as they possess the land and set up the kingdom, so shall we, if we make their mistakes are stepping stones to success. Number three, finally we are to hasten the coming of the day of the Yahweh, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat. We are to bring a new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. 2 Peter 3:12-13. For another phase of this work, we also have the flood as a type, as the Noah's preaching brought the world unto an end in his day, so our preaching will bring the world to an end in our day. As the faithful of that day found refuge in the Noah's Ark, so the faithful of the day shall find refuge in the kingdom, the purified church here forecasted. For the work of these three movements, Zechariah, Moses, and Noah's, therefore typifies every phase of our work. Here is clearly seen that our Yahweh-given work does not consist of the preaching alone, but of the manual work also. There are thousands in the world who are as the anxious to preach as are the bearers to fill up their stomach after coming out of their winter hibernation, but there are few who will put their shoulders to the wheel and keep on pushing. What the world needs today is not preachers, but teachers who can teach with the one hand and use the pick on the shovel with the other hand. Neither is the world in the need of men angling for the Moses and for the Aaron's office, but it is in the dire need of men who can take orders and successfully carry them through, men who dare face the giant, the lion, and the bear, men who dare be the heroes for the Yahweh, men wondered at, men with the unfailing faith and unlimited patience, believing that Yahweh himself is steering the ship and that therefore there can be no failure. The world certainly needs men like the Noah, Moses, David, Ezra, Nehemiah, and a great number of the Jobs. Our work, our duty, are now made as clear as they can be made at this particular time. For we need, therefore err, need not be ignorant of what is to be done and how it is to be done. It says, many honestly believe that they are doing Yahweh's work, or at least helping in it. But if they will examine their daily accomplishments, their motives, their aims and purposes, some will find that they are not working for the Yahweh, but that they are either killing time or working for their self. Actually now, as in the Moses time, there are occasions when one is at a loss for the knowing of whether the saints or the devils are busily engaged in the Yahweh's great work. Stop, listen, think, check up on yourself. It will be well worth your time and your energy. Find out who you are, what you are, and where you are. For the Ezra and the Nehemiah had an arduous time in the building of the ancient waste. I believe that the Yahweh could have put angels to keep away their enemies from the interfering with their project, but he chose to have the faithful builders hold the sword in the one hand and the bricks in the other hand. Nehemiah 4:17-18. For their work was as hard if not harder than ours is, but they were faithful at it. And we cannot afford to be any less faithful. Yes, they did as much working as they did teaching. They taught not only religion, but building too. Do you not see that, as the types point out, the things that we are called to do cannot be done by the teaching alone? But we are now ready to read Zechariah 12, 9 and 10. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek for the destroying of all the nations that come against Jerusalem, and I will pour out upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of the grace and of the supplication, and they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourns for his only son, and shall be in the bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. When the Yahweh begins to destroy the nations, he will pour upon his saints the spirit of the grace. Then will they really mourn for the sinning against the Yahweh. For it is because men do not now have that spirit that their personal feelings are so easily hurt for any little thing done against them. And since the spirit of the grace causes one to mourn not for self, it is understandable that to pity oneself and to be hurt over what others do or say against them is a sure sign that the latter, that rather than being imbued with the spirit of the grace, he is imbued with the spirit of the devil, who is daily seeking for the discouraging and for the disheartening by the pitying self. Remember that self-pity is outright self-defeat. Not one of us has ever been abused as was Yahshua, and yet self in him never was hurt. If we are to be sorry for anyone, let us not be sorry for self. We sometimes think we are sorry for our sinning and are causing the Yahshua to be abused and crucified, but our sorrow is not real. It is only theoretical. When this spirit of the grace is poured upon us, then shall we fully realize that it was not the Jews, but the sins of all of us that crucified Yahshua. And then we would count it a privilege to be abused for Yahshua's sake. Well, I don't agree with that last statement, that the sins of all of us that crucified. I wasn't living in Christ's day when he was crucified, so I had no sins to crucify him with. And then neither did anybody live today. They weren't living back then, so this is a false statement. And then we would count it a privilege to be abused for Yahshua's sake. So what really Beit was trying to say is, if we had lived back there in his day, we would have crucified Yahshua with our own sin just like they did. That's what he should have said. Zechariah 12, 11, 14. And that day shall there be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as a mourning of the Hadarimon in the valley of the Megiddon, and the land shall mourn, every family apart, the family of the house of the David apart, and their wives apart, the family of the house of the Nathan apart, and their wives apart, the family of the house of the Levi apart, and their wives apart, the family of the Shimei apart, and their wives apart, all the families that remain, every family apart, and their wives apart. For a great day is coming, brother and sister. If that day was not right at hand, we would not today have this light cast on our pathway. Let us therefore work for the upbuilding of the Yahshua's kingdom, And that's the everlasting kingdom of David, as pointed out in Daniel 2, 44 and 45. That is to be set up in these last days, that his will be done in us, and thus at long last be done on the earth as it is done in the heaven. As forerunners of his kingdom, let us do all we can to prove worthy of the standing with him on the Mount Zion, to be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before the saints, to carry the everlasting teaching of the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10, 19 and 20, the new and living way unto all nations, and thus to bring the world's sins and woes to an end. End of Tommy Greetings number 9. And we have 19 more minutes to go on this hour, so we'll just automatically go into one time of greetings number 10 before going to prayer thought for that. What brings success to revival and reformation? Vicki Holler, October the 12th, 1946. It says this is the one time of greetings number 10. Okay. It says, in Life as Sketches, page 425, we read, I have been deeply impressed by the scenes that have recently passed before me in the night session, or the night season. For there seemed to be a great movement, a work of the revival going forward in the many places. For our people were moving into line, responding unto the Yahweh's call. My brethren, the Yahweh is speaking unto us. Here is a forecast of a great movement, a movement that is to carry on the work of a successful revival in many places. This would have to be the fifth movement, Matthew 20, verse 6, that fifth group of laborers that's called at the 11th hour. This is not the seventh day Adventists. They were called at the fourth, at the ninth hour. Matthew 20, verse 5. Here it is also seen that the people will respond to Yahweh's call, and that this envisioned work of the revival is to be carried by a divinely organized movement, not by the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, though, and not by a man here and a man there. For the movement is Yahweh created, not devised by men. We have through the years been I've seen numerous persons and groups of the persons in the different parts of the Adventist world who at one time or another did stage what they termed a revival and reformation, but not one of them have ever been able to accomplish much, if anything. One by one, they end up by the quitting and the disgust, rather than being revived and reformed for the better. They, after each such effort, stayed away from the Yahweh and closer unto the level of the world standards. Sure it must be unto every open-eyed truth seeker that the revival, which the Lord sketches, predicts, and pictures and this layman's movement, for aside from this movement that is now on the foot, slowly but steadily sweeping away the rubbish throughout the Adventist world, we have never as yet in the existence of the author's writings and the live sketches seen another such an organized movement turned such a revival as this. for the Bible contains the complete plan of the salvation for all humanity. How do I know this? I know it because his story begins with the creation and ends with the earth made new. Between the first and the last pages of the Bible, then lies the complete formula for the man's salvation and redemption. And if such a revival reformation as here envisioned is to take place in the world, between those two events, creation and the new earth, then the material and the example of such a work must be found somewhere in the pages of the Bible. Before we read what the Bible has to say on the subject, I think we should first concretely define the word revival and reformation. For the revival, the word revival, the dictionary gives, is to restore, to refresh, to renew, to reawaken, to reestablish. And for the information, or for the Reformation, the dictionary gives the definition, to make better morally, change for the better. For Yeshua, righteousness defines these terms of the speech as follows. A revival and reformation must take place with the ministration of the Holy Spirit. For the revival and the reformation are two different things. Revival signifies a renewal of the spiritual life, a quickening of the powers of the mind and heart, a resurrection from the spiritual death. Reformation signifies a reorganization, a change in the ideas and theories, habits, and practices. For the Reformation will not bring forth the good fruit of the righteousness unless it is connected with the revival of the Spirit. Revival and Reformation are to do their appointed work, and in doing this work, they must blend. Page 154, 1926 edition, and page 121 of 1941 edition. What is the difference between the revival and Reformation? For the revival means to bring the spiritual qualities back to life, to quicken the mind and the heart to the upbuilding of the spiritual phase of the life, to reestablish, to repair. And the Reformation means to change one's self for the better, to reorganize the moral powers with the divine guidance. In the Bible, there is but one example, type of such a revival and reformation, as the one here predicted. We find it recorded in the books of the Haggai and Zechariah's prophecies. You remember that these ancient Jews were by the Cyrus, king of the Persians, released from the captivity as soon as the Babylon fell. He made a decree that they should go back to their homeland to rebuild the desolations and the ruins. The king especially decreed that the rebuilding of the temple and the reestablishing of the worship of the Yahweh of the heaven should be done faithfully and speedily. A revival of the spiritual part of the nation, the temple, and its system of the worship was their chief concern. But according unto Ezra 4:24, Cyrus's decree, and also another that was issued a few years later, were both frustrated. And in the second year of the reign of the Darius, king of the Persia, the work completely ceased, and apparently there was no hope of the ever resuming again. Then it was that the prophets Haggai and Zechariah were called to their prophetic office and commission to revive and to reorganize the builders for the deserted temple project. See Haggai 1:1, Zechariah 1:1. For the happy and surprising result was that within 4 short years, the stately spiritual edifice was quickly finished, whereas all the previous and strenuous efforts of the kings and people covering a period of over 30 years completely failed. See Ezra 6:15. Let us now realistically consider why the builders' efforts and the king's decrees at first failed, and why at last they succeeded. Before the Haggai and Zechariah were called to the prophetic office, many of the Jews returned from the Babylon unto Jerusalem, although the majority remained in Babylon. That is, the builders voluntarily went to build only because the captivity had ended and because the king had decreed that the temple of the Yahweh should be built. But both the builders and the king's efforts were a complete failure. All came to naught. Then it was that through his prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, Yahweh directed the work, and then it was that they quickly finished. In other words, not before the Yahweh took the reins in his own hands, through the spirit of the prophecy, did the work prosper. In fact, sacred history proves that nothing has ever prospered in the Yahweh's work without the living spirit of the prophecy and its midst. For example, Moses understood from the childhood up that his lot was to deliver the children of Israel from the Pharaoh's brickyard. And when he was fully grown up and thoroughly trained in the courts of the Pharaoh, he saw himself strong and capable. He quickly understood to deliver the enslaved Hebrew host, killed one Egyptian, got into an argument with a Hebrew, then deserted everything, and without hope of ever coming back, he fled the country in complete defeat. 40 years later, after Yahweh endowed him with the spirit of the prophecy, he returned and triumphantly led the Hebrew captives out of Egypt. These special incidences make crystal clear that no matter how hard men may try to bring about a revival reformation among the Yahweh's people, their efforts are doomed to failure. Even before they start, if Yahweh does not himself, through his prophets, take charge of the work. Now, as to what took place in the day of the Reformation after the ancient house of Yahweh had been built, let us read Ezra chapter 6, verse 19 to 21. And the children of the captivity kept the Passover upon the 14th day of the first month, for the priests and the Levites were purified together. All of them were pure and killed the Passover for all the children of the captivity, and for their brethren, the priests, and for themselves, and the children of the Israel which were come again out of the captivity, and all such had separated themselves unto them from the filthiness of the heathen of the land, to seek the Yahweh of the Israel, did eat. Let us now connect Ezra's record with that of the Nehemiah 10:28-32, and the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the porters, the singers, the Nethinims, and all they that had separated themselves from the people at the of the lands unto the Lord Yahweh, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone having knowledge and having understanding, they clave to their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in the Yahweh's law, which was given by the Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and to observe and do all the commandments of the Yahweh, our Redeemer, and His judgment, and His statutes, and that we would not give our daughters unto the people of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons, and that the people of the land bring a war or any victors on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day, that we would leave this seventh year and the exaction of every debt. Also, we made ordinances for us to charge ourselves yearly with the third part of a shekel for the service of the house of the Yahweh. Here you see a record of the complete revival and reformation such as had never been. For the things that were revived are these. Number one, the house of Yahweh was rebuilt and its sacred services reinstituted. Number two, the old ways were rebuilt and the city re-inhabited. The reforms which took place were, number one, the priests and the Levites were all purified. Number two, all the children of the captivity separated themselves from the filthiness of the heathen. Number three, all entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in the Yahweh's laws, to observe His judgment and His statutes, not to give their daughters to the people of the land, nor to take their daughters for wives for their sons. Number four, they were they made Sabbath observance a third a strict rule. And number five, they liberally pledged to support the work of the Yahweh with their means. Such genuine and complete revival and reformation had never been launched since man fell into sin. That the revival and reformation of that day is a type of the revival and reformation to take place in our day, and principally noted from the fact that the prophecies of both Haggai and Zechariah intermingle dual events, one that takes place in their day, another take place in our day, says the Yahweh, Haggai 2:21-23. Speak unto Zerubbabel, governor of the Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of the kingdom, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses. And their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. And that day saith to Yahshua the host, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant. The son of the Shealtiel saith to Yahweh, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith to Yahshua of the host. Here we are told that in the day that Yahweh destroyed the strength of the heathen kingdom, which event is yet future, He makes ancient Zerubbabel a signet of a Zerubbabel in the day that the strength of the kingdom, the kingdoms is destroyed. Again we read Zechariah 2:5, 11, and 13. For I said to Yahweh, for be unto her as a wall of fire. Let's do it again. For I said to Yahshua the Son, will be unto her for a wall of the fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. And many nations shall be joined unto the Yahweh in that day, and shall, or the Yahshua the Son in that day, and shall be my people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that the Yahshua of the host has sent me unto thee. Be silent, O you flesh, before the Yahshua, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. For the wall which the Jews built around Jerusalem in Zechariah's day was of stone, but the one here predicted is to be of the fire, far superior, rendering absolute security unto the inhabitants that are within. Moreover, no other people, none besides the Jews, were permitted to join the builders of Jerusalem in his day. But in our day, many nations are to join. Furthermore, at the fulfillment of these prophecies, the Yahshua requests that all flesh reverently and silently note that he is raised up out of his holy habitation, that he is now visiting the earth. Zechariah 2:8. For thus saith Yahshua of the host, this is the Son speaking, after glory, after the church, eternal hath he sent me unto the nation which spoils you, for he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. In Zechariah's day, the Yahshua did not send anyone unto the nations after anything, but in our day, he is to send the antipodal Zechariah, interpreter of the Zechariah. Let's read that again. In the Zechariah's day, the Yahshua did not send anyone unto the nations after anything, but in our day, he is to send the antipodal Zechariah, interpreter of the Zechariah's prophecy, unto the nations that are ruling and exploiting his people, and those nations are to become a spoil and shall know that the Yahshua has sent him. Zechariah 2:12. And the Yahshua shall inherit Judah his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. When the nations join the Yahshua in the Holy Land, then it is that he shall inherit Judah and again choose Jerusalem. And most significant of all, he declares that he is already raised up out of his holy habitation for the accomplishing of all these things. Zechariah 8:7-20:21. Thus saith Yahshua of the host, the Son, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. Thus saith Yahshua of the host, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people, and the inhabitants of the many cities, and the inhabitants of the one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Yahweh and to seek the Yahshua, his son of the host. I will go also. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Okay, we have a little bit left. All right. We'll just go ahead and put it on the tail end of this. For the prophet's attention was directed unto a time when the Yahshua is to gather his people from both the east and the west, unto a time when one city inhabitants will invite another to go to the Holy Land. This same prophecy appears in both Zechariah chapter 2 and Micah chapter 4. Zechariah 8:22-23. Yes, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Yahshua of the host in Jerusalem, that's the Son, and to pray before the Yahweh, that's the Father. Thus saith the Yahshua of the host. So the Father and the Son are both there then in Jerusalem. In those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take a hold out of all languages of the nation, even shall take a hold of the spirit of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that the Yahweh is with you. Obviously, the 10 men are a representative figure of the universality, as are the 10 virgins of the Matthew 25. If so, then the church as a body will speak all the languages of the nation. They're taking hold of the one that is a Jew and saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that the Yahshua is with you. It definitely points out that someone as a descendant of the apostolic Jews, and typical apostolic Jews, will proclaim Yahweh's ingathering message in the time of the end, and that he will be recognized as such. So this is untypical David that's going to do this. The same thing as in the spirit of Elijah. Let us now turn to Zechariah 9:9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of the Zion. Shout, O daughter of the Jerusalem. Behold, our king cometh unto thee. He is just in heaven. Salvation lowly and right upon an ass, and upon a colt the foal of an ass. In these prophecies is brought to you the first advent of the Yeshua. Zechariah 9:10. And I will cut off the chariot from the Ephraim, and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the heathen, and his dominion shall be from sea to, even to sea, and from the river even unto the ends of the earth. That is, Yahweh is to bring the ancient kingdoms, Ephraim and Jerusalem, Israel and Judah, to an end, and then turn to the Gentiles and speaks salvation. That's the teaching of the brother everlasting kingdom of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20. This shall his dominion be over all the earth. Zechariah 12:3-9. And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, so all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. In that day shall Yahshua defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before them. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. That is after the disintegrating of the ancient kingdoms, Israel and Judah, he is again to reestablish and unify them as depicted in the Ezekiel 36, and in the other portions of the scriptures. At that time, Jerusalem, as the holy city of the saints, is to become a burdensome stone for all the people of the earth. That is, they will hate the city and its inhabitants and will attempt to take it, but instead they will be cut in pieces, for the Yahshua will defend his people. Then it is that even the most feeble among the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be as the willing as Syrian and as Christian, as well as the ancient David, and the house of the David, the kingdom that is to be set up, which is but the church purified, no sinners among them, Isaiah 52:1, shall be as the angel of the Yahweh before the people. Since the Zechariah's prophecy met only partial fulfillment in the days that the Jews returned from the Babylon unto Jerusalem, and since his writings speak interchangeably of another such movement, the which is to be greater than the former, there is therefore no doubt but that the latter is the antitype of the former. Hence the revival and reformation of the Zechariah's time is to repeat in our time. For the builder's failure to continue with the work and to bring revival and reformation before the Haggai and Zechariah were called to the prophetic office, and their success after Yahweh's the prophets took over perfectly demonstrates that without the living spirit of the prophecy in the midst, no revival and reformation efforts can succeed. And that is why they all therefore have failed. For the type also perfectly demonstrates that since Yahweh has now, Yahshua has now risen from his holy habitation, that's the Son, and has taken the reins in his own hands. That was a term of Texas at Passover 2002, when Yahshua came to the threshold of the house down there, and he took the reins in his own hands from Brother Study Johnson. And he's had the reins ever since in his own hands. Revival, reformation is sure to triumph. It is therefore useless to agitate revival and reformation while one knows not what and how actually to revive or to reform. It is commendable to hold up the standard, but it's certainly is not in the Yahweh's order for one to work up something and to call it revival and reformation. In the conclusion, let us summarize that the two main points which I studied of the afternoon has definitely made clear and us. Number one, that a work and movement similar unto for those of the Zechariah's day is successfully to bring revival and reformation among the Yahweh's people of the day. That those who expect the promised blessing must wholeheartedly enter into it. Number two, that without the living spirit of the prophecy in our midst, there can be no success in any revival and reformation, and that the sooner we know it, the quicker we shall achieve our goal. This brings the end of our study on One Time of Greetings number 10, by the Vicky Holler. We're going to close our service now with a song.